Hello.
Hello.
Top of the morning to you.
I was just going to say that.
So we are drinking the Blarney Stone.
And again, say this every time, but it's absolutely gorgeous.
I think it's going to be gross though.
Oh, it's totally going to taste gross.
So we've got some Irish whiskey, creme de menthe, and green chartreuse. Yeah. Yeah. And it's in very, very pretty crystal goblet. Well, they're wine glasses,
yes,
right?
Yes. It's in my Waterford crystal wine glasses. And we actually had to put them in the freezer to go get children from school because it's the last day of school. And so now they're all frosty and beautiful.
Hopefully not as disgusting now that they're super chill.
Right. The color is this stunning emerald. Like, it looks like a liquid emerald. It's absolutely gorgeous through the crystal.
And I have a glass of ice next to us because we may need it.
Totally putting in ice. If I take more than one drink.
Okay, I'm going to try it.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'm smelling it. Don't smell it. Just drink it.
It smells like mouthwash.
Oh my God, it does.
Tastes like mouthwash.
Yeah, that's nasty. It's Scope. We're drinking Scope.
It's not as bad as I thought it was going
to
be.
Are you punking me? Did you go to my bathroom and get the Scope and pour it in the glasses?
Yes. Enjoy your glass of nice, chilled glass of Scope.
You could legit use this in mouthwash.
It's honestly, I don't like it. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be, but I don't know how much I'm going to drink.
I'll slowly sip on it.
Yeah. I'm getting the, like, whiskey feel in my throat.
Yeah. And I can taste the chartreuse, surprisingly.
I can't.
Yeah, I thought the mint would completely obliterate it.
That's all I've got is the mint. Interesting how we taste different things.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. All right. So, Blarney Stone. I had to do it. Like, that's the name of the thing. I had to do the Blarney Stone.
I figured you would. I was talking to child number two, and so I was like, I'm pretty sure, I don't know that much about it, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to hear more in a little bit.
Yes. The Blarney Stone. So this is one of my 500 source ones.
Oh, God.
So history.com, irishcentral.com, Authentic Vacations, Shamrock Gift, Blarney Castle, Sacred Sites, Irish Central, a place called Rome, ROAM.com, twice. I used two different articles from them. And OK Magazine.
Okay.
Okay. All right, here we go. The Blarney Stone. So according to Irish legend, if you want the gift of gab, all you need to do is go kiss the Blarney Stone while you are hanging upside down over the highest parapet of a 15th century castle.
I mean, it would be a kind of fun thing to do, but also it's kind of gross.
As many pictures, I'm not even thinking about the grossness, just the pictures of what I've seen of people doing it. No, because I'm petrified of heights. So anyway, I will continue. So one of the most unique and fascinating words in the Irish language is Blarney, and it literally means eloquence with a dash of charm and wisdom.
Just like me.
Yes. John O'Connor Power.
Why are you laughing so hard?
Oh my God. Yes, we recorded another one earlier, but I literally didn't drink my drink.
No, not at all.
So John O'Connor Power explains, quote, flattery sweetened by humor and a flourish of wit. Those who mix with Irish folks have many examples of it in their everyday experience. And I found a very cute example of Blarney. And it says, baloney is when you tell a woman of 50 that she looks 18. Blarney is when you ask a woman how old she is because you want to know at what age women are their most beautiful.
Oh, that's smooth.
Very smooth. So not like this drink. So kissing Ireland's Blarney Stone is a tradition that's been around for several centuries. It is said to give the person the gift of Blarney, eloquence and persuasiveness. It is set into the wall of Blarney Castle, which has become one of Ireland's biggest tourist attractions since the 1800s when they started really doing tourism.
I'm wondering if this would be good as a shot with like some whipped cream and then you just shoot the whole thing.
I think it would be better as that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if how much it would change the taste adding a tiny bit of Irish cream.
I don't know.
It's not good. I haven't taken any more sips. The castle was built, the original castle was built in the 10th century that was made of wood, and then it was later fortified with stone in 1210.
So they just like covered the wood with stones? Uh-huh. Like,
it got knocked down. It got knocked down and rebuilt in 1446.
Probably a wise idea.
Yes, because that's really not going to protect you from anything.
No.
So the word Blarney means skillful flattery or nonsense. It is supposed to have come into everyday use following an incident involving the head of the McCarthy family, who is the one who owned that estate, and Queen Elizabeth I, who ruled from 1558 to 1603. The last time we used these glasses was in the Queen Elizabeth cocktail when I talked about Elizabeth's grandma.
We were just talking about that. That's mm-hmm. Callback.
Callback. And Queen Elizabeth also features in another Irish drink that we put in the other Waterford that I talked about, the pirate.
Oh, yeah.
So Queen Elizabeth and McCarthy. So the Queen wanted McCarthy's land. So she sent the Earl of, I'm going to say all these names wrong.
You do every time. I do every time. There's no need for disclaimers.
Just want in case we have any new listeners. The Earl of Leicester?
Sounds good.
I was thinking Leicester, but I'm not sure. Anyway, she sent him to go take the castle and the land. And the McCarthy just kept like buffaloing him and putting him off. Oh, let's have a party. Oh, let's do this. Oh, let's do that. And so the Earl would report back to the Queen. She carries him like a baby. Like, look at the way his legs are spread around her waist like a baby. And he's just snuggling up to her little face.
You're talking about Kitty Cat.
I'm talking about Kitty Cat. With child number two. And child number two, because they just walked up and it's really sweet. He loves her so much. Kitten says, pay attention to me. Don't talk to her. Pay attention to me.
Where's the other one?
She's in the car looking at her yearbook. All right. Continuing. All right. So anyway, he just keeps like stalling this guy. So the Earl is sending reports back to Elizabeth, and Elizabeth finally says, all of your reports are just blarney. So that is where it comes into use.
She's probably not wrong.
Probably not. So this castle, like I said, Elizabeth wanted it. It was in a good location. It was located on a cliff, the edge of a cliff, where you could see out, and it's a really prime spot for warfare. So a lot of other clans would constantly fight over trying to get this castle. During the Confederate War of 1641 to 1652, Cromwell ended up getting possession of the castle. And he aggressively attacked it with gunfire and raided it. And everybody except for two servants managed to escape. Part of the reason he was attacking the castle, not only for its militarily strategic location, but there was said to be a treasure.
Oh.
Yes. So there is a treasure in the castle.
Treasure.
Treasure. So anyway, treasure is supposed to be in this castle, but when they get there, the treasure is already gone. And they think that it was snuck out by the McCarthy clan through their underground caves and passageways.
Oh, that's awesome.
They had like this whole city of caves underneath. One, they were known as the Badger's Caves, and there were three passages. One went all the way to Cork, one went to the lake, and one went all the way to the town Kerry.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like you could just disappear in your castle and pop up in another town.
Do you know if they're still existing?
I do not know. There's only certain things. There's a private home on the land now, and they give tours in the private home, but the castle and the grounds are the only things that are open to the public. You can see, I talk about the murder room later, and you can see the murder room.
I did.
But just, I don't know about the case.
I did just barely skim an article about the murder room because I was looking for a topic. My topic has nothing to do with the castle, so.
I can't. It's gross.
Gargle it before you brush your teeth tonight.
Yeah. But they said, well, we'll talk about it when we get there. So anyway, you can cruise around in these caves to get someplace. So another owner of the estate later actually drained the lake because he heard that they threw this treasure into the lake to hide it from Cromwell.
What an awful person.
It cost so much money and there was no treasure. So he just wasted a fortune.
For a potential treasure that he has no idea about.
Wasn't there. So the The estate just continues to pass hands. By this time, it goes to Donga McCarthy, who was a descendant of the original owner. He was the fourth Earl of Clan Carthy in 1661. He supported James II in the Williamite Wars. And the property was then seized by the Hollow Sword Blade Company, who later sold it to Sir James St. John Jeffreys, which... That's a name.
That's a lot of names. Sir John...
Sir James St. John Jeffreys.
I can't say it.
No. There's a song with all the different names.
John Jacob Jingleheimer
Schmidt. Yes, that's it. John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt. John Jeffreys. James John Jeffreys. So he was the governor of Cork in 1668. He eventually marries into the Colehurst family, and the Colehurst family are the ones that still own it today.
Interesting. Yes. So it's been in the family a while.
Yes, for quite a while. The village name is named Blarney, and it is derived from the Irish word Anblarna, which means the plain. There are many, many legends about why we have the Blarney Stone and why it's important and we kiss it. The first story involves the goddess Claudina. They also call her the Queen of the Banshees, so I'm going to refer to her as
the Queen of the Banshees.
Yes. Which, speaking of Banshee, we need to go for lunch.
Yes. When they open.
California.
No, it's not California. Well, it partially is. They can't get staff.
Oh, because California.
Yeah.
Let's pay people to sit at home.
Part of it's the federal government.
Yeah. So I'll go work there.
Go work there.
I totally go work there. I might do that. Except I'm not young and cute. But anyway... I'm 49.
Oh, you are 49.
It's seriously disturbing me. I was disturbed by 25, and I'm disturbed by 49.
But you know what? My friend, when we went to her 50th birthday party, it was a great party.
I don't think I'll have a problem with 50. I don't know why. But 49 is deeply disturbing me. It just sounds old.
49, it's just like... It sounds over the hill.
Yeah. 50 sounds like, oh, you're 50. 50 is the new 40.
Yeah.
Not 49. 49's just old. I don't like it. I'll have to go kiss the Blarney Stone and see if I can get some eloquence. All right. Anyway, burn. So, Queen of the Banshees. That's where we were. So, he prays to the Queen of the Banshee, and she comes to him in a dream, and he was concerned that he was going to lose this lawsuit. So he prays to Queen of the Banshees, and she says, okay, on your way to court, kiss the first stone you see. So he kisses said stone and wins his case. So he's still in the process of building his castle. So he brings the stone home and incorporates it into the castle.
Which, okay, the interesting thing to me is when I think of a stone, I think of something that you can hold in your hand.
No, this is like the size of my car.
But if somebody would have said, kiss the first stone you see, I would have walked right by that because I'm like, that's a giant rock.
Right, that's a boulder.
Like, I want like a little cute stone that I can hold it in my hand and then put it in my pocket and take it home for good luck.
No, that is not this. Although I do have some stories about little cute stones that you can pick up and put in your pocket.
Oh.
Not so good luck. A little foreshadowing there. So that is one of the stories about how the stone gets its power. The official Blarney Castle website says that McCarthy saved a witch from drowning, and so to repay him, she tells him about this magical stone that has magical powers, and he can take it home and put it in his castle.
Which, call back to our last episode, if she was really a witch, she wouldn't need to be saved from drowning according to that book.
Because she would float.
Yes.
You know, like most people do. So if you listen to the episode on
Long Island
iced tea, you know what we're talking about. So if you haven't, go back and do so. So this stone that the witch gave to the McCarthys and told them about the special powers, some believe it came, there's a lot of these stories. So some believe it came from Scotland, and how the stone ended up in Scotland goes all the way back to the prophet Jeremiah. So it is said that, and further actually, that the Blarney Stone was used as a pillow by Jacob when he was on the run from his brother Esau.
Oh, that old.
Yes, so that old. So while he is like Book of Genesis old.
Biblically old.
So while he is laying with this stone as his pillow, God appears to him in a dream and blesses him. And so then he takes this stone and he has it as the bottom stone for a pillar that he consecrates to God. Then the stone is eventually brought to... Oh, the stone is also used by Moses, who strikes it to give water to the slaves that have escaped from Egypt. The Israelites that have escaped from Egypt. Wow. The stone's special. The
stone's extremely powerful.
It's a very special. It was also hidden behind... David hid behind it when he was on the run from King Saul. And Jonathan is the one who told him to do this.
So is there... Is there references to all these stories in the Bible? Like David hid behind this stone. Like, I know it probably wasn't called Blarney because it, you know,
right.
Whatever, but...
That David hid behind stone. I don't know.
I'm not a biblical scholar, so...
I know these stories, but I don't know them well enough
like,
to
did
know...
they mention a stone?
Right. Well, and even if they did mention a stone, we may not know because of the hundreds of translations that the Bible's gone through.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So it may have just been lost away. But that would be very interesting to see. If you know, tell us.
If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. And you should also tell us at crimeandtimeotr@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or Facebook. Or all of the other places. Or our Patreon, where you can buy us a drink.
We could use a drink.
We could.
Better this one's than not this. Good.
Better than this. We should send a child to the refrigerator to get a beer.
Get us a new drink.
So, little stone. Stone, and then, so, the prophet Jeremiah then brings this stone to Ireland during the Crusades. Stones, the rock's got some history. Then, once it gets to Ireland, it is also still a special stone. It was used as the oracle throne that would become Lea Fail or Fatal Stone. It is said to be placed on the inauguration mound of the Hill of Tara, which I read a book, Something Tara, and it's very, very good. So if you find it,
find the book.
It. Find the book, Something Tara or Tara Something. Anyway, it's a hill, an important hill in Ireland. So they put this rock and they use it as a inauguration mound, like think Arthur pulling the Excalibur.
That's what
the
I
stone.
Was just thinking.
Yeah, yeah. That type of legend. So when the right person sits on it, you will know.
A sorting hat.
A sorting hat. Yes. There's another website that made reference to it like the sorting hat.
I'm not even a Harry Potterite, and I've thought of that.
Yeah. So they sit on this stone, and they're using it for, obviously, the coronation of these kings. So there is currently another stone that lies in that place now, but the Blarney stone was supposed to be the original Lea Fail, however you say that. There's also another tale that says Saint Columba, who is a highly influential saint in Christianity, around what would be Scotland, brought the stone. It was said to be the deathbed pillow on the island of Iona, where he placed a monastery. And so Saint Columba died on this stone on the island of Iona. And then the stone was transferred to mainland Scotland. And then it was used through English and Scottish royalty as the Stone of Destiny. Well, how did it get to Ireland? Here's how it got to Ireland. So they say that this stone, called the Stone of Destiny, was used for as Scottish coronation stone for Scottish and English monarchs, starting with the first king of Scotland in 847.
That's way old.
Yes. So then they gave it to Ireland as a thank you for supporting Scotland in the Battle of Bannockburn.
That's really nice, though.
Yes.
That's a treasure.
Treasure. So Robert the Bruce is said to have given this to who was the King of Scots, was said to have given this to Cormac McCarthy, who was the King of Munster, for sending 5,000 men to help Bruce defeat the English at the Battle of Bannockburn in 1314, which I think is referenced in our William Wallace episode, Scottish Breakfast.
Scottish Breakfast Tea.
Which was good.
I actually like that. I was going through my old photos.
Uh-huh.
And that was one of the ones I still had the drink photos from. And I was like, oh, I'm like, I actually, that was kind of fun.
That was a good one.
And then I had to dehydrate limes, which was kind of fun also. So.
Yes. You've dehydrated quite a lot of fruit for our different cocktails. The Silk Road one had something you had to dehydrate, the star anise or something.
Oh no, that was done. I had to make ginger syrup.
Ginger syrup.
But
I knew you made something.
You would, if you go back and listen, you'll realize I failed at my ginger syrup. It burnt. So I bought ginger syrup at BevMo. So
that's funny. We've had some adventures with this. For some reason, the one with the coffee and the espresso beans in the bottom just popped in my head. And you could tell we drank two of them.
Oh, and then we started talking really fast. That was a good cocktail.
Don't listen to that one on double speed.
Was that the Russian bear?
I don't remember if it was the Russian bear or if it was something else Russian. Because we did. Yeah, that was a Russian bear. Russia with Love was the other one, which was not good.
That one wasn't good. But I did like the glasses, those like missile kind of.
Yes, my weird champagne flutes that look like vodka glasses to me. We've not used those for anything else.
Oh, we need to plan that.
All right, so Super Old Stone. So there's all of these different theories of how it got there, and that it could have come from here, and it could have come from here. However, they did a geological study on it in 2014, and geologists from the University of Glasgow found out that it is just plain old limestone that is local to the south of Ireland. It is, however, 330 million years old, but it's just from Ireland.
Well, it is plausible, since it's that old, though, that it could have been transported prior to us ever knowing about it to a different location and then made its way back home.
That's true. You never know, because I would like to think that
it is the stone of destiny.
What's his name? It is, because it changes your destiny. What's his name back here? The first guy. Jacob, running away from his evil brother, used it as a pillow. All right, so... traveling around... Today, people from around the globe go to... kiss the Blarney Stone. Winston Churchill is some of the notable figures who've kissed it. He kissed it in 1912 when he was the first Lord of the Admiralty.
And look what he did.
I know. He became British Prime Minister in 1940 and he earned a reputation as a masterful orator. Somewhere I read something about he had a stutter. I thought that was the king, but maybe Winston Churchill did too. I don't know.
I've never heard that Winston Churchill did, but if he did, he completely... didn't present when he was speaking.
Right. His speeches are beautiful. We studied one in one of the years that I taught.
Interesting because a deputy that I knew, I still know him. Anyway, when he was first hired by the agency that he was working for, he came in with the person that was training him and he had a stutter. And I'm like, oh, how's this going to go?
Yeah.
And so... you know, he was brand new to being in law enforcement and everything. And I listened to him on the radio and he never stuttered. And
interesting.
Like the whole time you would listen to him and like the whole time he was interacting with people, like just his mindset was like, he knows what he's doing, you know.
So when he's doing something that he's confident at.
He did not stutter. However, maybe like a year or two into me first being acquainted with him, I was at a party and he was there. Uh-huh. And having an interaction, a social interaction with him, he stuttered.
So he was nervous about social interactions.
But professionally, he did not.
He's very confident.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I will stutter if I am very, very upset.
I cry when I'm very, very upset.
I do that too, but then I also just stutter.
My other coworker friend, she shares that with me. Like, and we both are like, it makes me more mad because the only reason why I'm crying is because I'm so mad.
Right.
And then
you look weak because you're crying.
And then I cry more because I'm upset that I'm crying because I'm mad.
Yeah. So picture that, and then I'm trying to explain something and I sound like that.
We're human.
We are human.
We're all human.
And I wish people would, I mean, yes, there is space for professionalism and whatnot. But when you are in a situation that you feel so, so strongly about, and it is happens to be a professional situation, like I love my students, love them. And if I'm in a situation where one of my students is in a, you know, failing or whatever, and I'm having...
You want to take care. Yeah.
I want to take care of them. They're my children. Yeah. They're my babies. And I've not done it often. But sometimes that has come out. Like, I was sitting in a room with a parent and they were being cruel to their child. Cruel. Captain of the football team, big, strong guy. And he just puts his head down and you see a tear drip off his face. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I know exactly who you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, he's like in his 30s now.
So. Yeah. With children.
With children. Lots and lots and lots of children. All right. So besides Winston Churchill, we've also, the stone has also been kissed by Mick Jagger, Michael Madsen, Laurel and Hardy. And then it said The Simpsons.
How did The Simpsons kiss the stone?
That's what I was curious about. It does not say whether it was the creator of The Simpsons, whether it was Jessica Simpson, or whether it was the actual cartoon characters
Maybe
that went and kissed the
stone. Maybe you should ask husband, because I don't know if he still keeps up on The Simpsons, but he used to be a huge fan.
No, that was the children.
Oh.
They just, he would watch it because it was just on at 7 o'clock or whatever. This was before DVR, when you had to watch TV when it was on. And so that's just kind of what was on when you got home from work.
And the kids like the bright colors.
The kids like the bright colors, yes. Yes. You don't remember, there was that movie, the Simpsons movie. They called them the Simpsons.
Simpsons.
And The Secret of Nim, that I had two copies of the DVD because one, I wanted to make sure I had one when one wore out.
Yeah.
I did that with a lot of things. We were talking about Rose Baby and Blueberry Baby.
Oh, yeah, Rose Baby.
And child number one goes, you had more than one of those. I'm like, yeah, I had three. Because you could not go anywhere without Rose Baby. So here's a Rose Baby in the car. There you go. Yeah, we're horrible parents. All right. Anyway, so Simpsons, the Simpsons have kissed the stone. So it's not quite as easy as just puckering up and kissing a rock. You have to climb up a spiral staircase that is very steep.
I can do that.
127 steps.
I'll do it.
Okay. Then you get to the top and you wait in line. And then when you get your turn, you sit down with your back to the stone. You lay backwards. Prior to the mid-1800s, you had to, I think it's the mid-1800s. I'm not sure. It doesn't say exactly when it happened. It just makes reference to them. So at one point prior, you had to have someone sit on your feet or hold your feet, and you scooch out as far as you can. You lean backwards over 100-foot drop and reach to kiss the stone. Now they have metal handrails that you hold onto and an attendant that holds your waist while your friend holds your feet. But you're still leaning backwards over 100-foot abyss to kiss a rock.
I would still do it.
I would not.
Would you hold my feet?
I would totally hold your feet, okay, if I don't have to look down the 100-foot drop. So a few people have died.
Only a few, though. That's not bad since the 1800s.
Correct. Yes, only a few, though. So the rails were put in when a poor traveler slipped free of his friend's grasp and fell 100 feet to his death.
Might have been alcohol involved in that one.
Probably was. In 2011, a 25-year-old man also fell to his death. Now, this was interesting because I found several articles that talked about the 25-year-old man falling to his death in 2011, and the castle was closed to the public and nobody could come in. But then there was a statement from the castle that said he was not injured in his fall.
Oh.
But the cops were there, they closed it down, and... yeah.
Discrepancy.
Yeah, I'm guessing he probably died. Anyway, so here's now where I'm going to start to sound like the Board of Tourism for Blarney. The rest of the landscape is varied and beautiful. There's a cave dwelling. There's a lake. There's a lot of different rock formations. There are beautiful trees. Rock Close makes a beautiful sanctuary for worship. One of the rock formations is called the Sisters, and it was said to be called that after the king of Munster had 7 daughters and 2 sons, and he went to battle with another clan's chief and he won, but his 2 sons died. And as he's coming home, he sees this prehistoric circle of stones, and he ordered 2 of the stones knocked down. Aww. To represent his 2 sons. So besides falling to your death, there's other ways the Blarney Stone can get you. If you remove a stone from the property, you will be cursed with misery and misfortune.
But there's parts of the stone that are in other places.
What do you mean?
There's a part of the stone that's in the former Fitzgerald's in Las Vegas.
Interesting. I did not know that.
So I know that because I was, when I was researching, I did like Blarney Stone theft and like did all these like different searches.
So you heard all the curses.
I did all these different searches, and I found this like several articles about, I forget what the casino is called now, but it's not
the Fitzgerald anymore.
Yeah, it's the former Fitzgerald.
Which I've been in.
And there is a Blarney Stone, a piece of the Blarney Stone there. And at one point, some drunk idiot stole it. And then when he sobered up the next morning and realized that he had done that and that he was going to get in big trouble, returned it. So that's all there was to that story. But
wow, I've never heard that. I used to go to the Fitzgerald because it was one of the lesser expensive casinos to gamble in.
Yeah. No, Las Vegas.
I thought there was one in Reno, too.
There is.
Okay. Then I've not been to the Fitzgerald in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I've been to the Fitzgerald in Reno. Interesting. Okay. Well, there's lots of different stories about the curse from stealing a stone from Blarney Castle. But Linda Kelly, who was a real estate agent from South Carolina, interesting though, the article that I read about her, because there was many articles about her, but the one I read called her an estate agent. So it was obviously written by someone from the UK. So she bought a stone from an estate sale that she was running from this priest who was retiring, and she bought it to send to her daughter who was studying abroad in Ireland. She said as soon as she bought the stone, things started changing. She lost work. Her entire business went dry in 2 months. Within about 4 days of purchasing the stone, she got suddenly beset with a depression that made it difficult for her to leave the house. Which, you know, would probably decimate your business if you're a real estate agent.
Yeah, I'm like, are there reasons?
Yeah.
Was it like 2007 when the housing market tanked?
Right. So she said that the former priest who had the stone prior to her was a sad recluse who shut himself off from the world, and that his home looked like a time capsule from the 1900s to the 1970s. She has no idea if it was the stone's fault, but she says she heard about the curse, and as soon as she mailed the stone back, everything was fine.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. It's kind of like the petrified forest. If you take wood from the petrified forest, people have similar experiences.
Really?
And so they often mail their pieces back that they took.
Uh-huh. Huh. Well, the guy from Blarney Castle, Charles Cohurst, says they get stones all the time being returned in the mail, and he confirmed that her piece came back, and his quote says, "It's all buried in mythology and folklore that speaks for itself. If someone takes a piece of stone, it's by their hand. I don't know if returning the stone makes them feel better, but I hopefully it does. If you look up Blarney Stone Curse," And if you look up Blarney Stone Curse, you're going to get all kinds of stuff about taking a souvenir from Blarney Castle. So, but the majority of the area is linked to this stone with its magical qualities, and Francis Sylvester, who is an Irish bard from the 19th century, wrote, "There is," okay, it's not great poetry, but "there is a stone there that whoever kisses, oh, he never misses to grow eloquent. 'Tis he may clamor to a lady's chamber or become a member of parliament."
That's cute.
It's cute. It's like Irish limericky type
thing.
But, you know, whether he's trying to bet a chick or become a politician, if he kisses the Blarney Stone, he's sure to not fail.
I do think that's interesting, though, that it's very similar, like, where the lore of if you take it, you're going to have bad luck as the Petrified Forest.
Yeah, but if you kiss it or whatever, you have good luck. Interesting. So that's my story. Now, I'm not going to sit back and drink this drink.
I did not stick with Ireland. We're going to Texas.
Okay.
And I'm going to talk to you about a murder that happened on Blarney Stone Way.
Ah, there's the connection.
So there's actually more than one murder we're talking about.
Oh my.
The entire name could be called the Texas Courtroom Massacre.
Is there a stone from the Blarney Castle located on Blarney Stone Way?
Not that I know of, but someone thought that would be a cute name to name this neighborhood. So we're in Kaufman County, Texas. And so Kaufman County, Texas, just like most counties, has a courthouse.
Yeah, that's kind of a requirement.
Right in front of the courthouse, there's a memorial to those killed in the Civil War. However, there's a newer memorial that has green ribbons, and it's in memory of District Attorney Mike McClelland, his wife Cynthia, and prosecutor Mark Hassey that were killed in 2013. And this story was like the biggest thing happening in like pretty much all of Texas, but especially Kaufman County at the time.
Oh, wow.
So right after the murders happened, all the locals were convinced that there was some sort of sinister force responsible for these three deaths. They were like...
Really? Yeah. I was joking about that.
No, but they were like, was it the Mexican drug cartels? Was it a white supremacist gang? Like, the talk of the town was it had to be someone really bad.
Oh, interesting.
So the usual police reports in Kaufman County, in the Kaufman Herald, which was the newspaper, were usually like loud music, possession of a controlled substance, dogs at large. Murder was not a thing that they covered very often. Okay, so January 31st, 2013, 57-year-old Mark Hassey, he was an assistant DA. He left his car parked just a block from the courthouse, and he gets out, starts walking towards the courthouse, and witnesses said that they saw a man in a black hooded sweatshirt pull out a pistol and shoot him several times.
Just out of the blue?
Yep. So he dies, and they tightened the security around the courthouse. They figured that...
You mean not all the people were killed at the same time?
No.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. So, I don't think I mentioned either that Mike McClellan was the DA of Kaufman County. So one of his prosecutors was Hassey.
Okay.
So after Hassey's murder, they tightened security. Cynthia McClellan told local reporters that she was worried about her husband's safety, but Mike said, "I'm not going to let the killers make me change the way I do business. I must assume that would be part of their motivation, and that ain't happening."
Sounds very Texan.
Yeah.
So is he speculating, or was there speculation that they were after him?
There was speculation that it could have had something to do with a court case they prosecuted, because it happened near the courthouse. Mm-hmm. And when there was talk of white supremacy, which I think I'll go into a little bit later, but Mike McClellan and Hassey, they were the two prosecutors that were on this particular case against a white supremacist organization. So Mike and Cynthia were 63 and 65 years old. They, like, everyone loved them in the community. They had lunch together almost every day at this place, like, just near the courthouse called the Especially For You Tea Room.
That's cute.
I looked up the menu because I was curious, and it's, like, a very just, like, typical sandwich and salad kind of place. Uh-huh. I mean, some of the stuff looked decent, but it wasn't fancy. I mean, it's, like, you know, lunch food.
Right.
Just before 7 p.m. on March 30th, some of the McClellan's friends went to their house on Blarney Stone Way they were concerned because they hadn't been able to reach them by phone. So, which that was unusual. Like, they were, like I said, pillars of the community. Yeah. They were all, like, involved in a lot of things, and they were just MIA. So
that's crazy.
The friends go to the house, and they find Cynthia's body just inside the front door.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Like, she died just inside the front door.
Yeah. And then they found Mike had been killed further toward the back of the house, and he was still in his pajamas.
So I wonder who they killed first, if she, like, answered the door and they shot her and then went on in to get him.
Yeah. I wonder, too, because it could have been, like...
She was trying to get out?
Or she got up earlier, or that's one thing. Like, he was still sleeping, but then it could have been that she was trying to get out. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But anyway, so an unnamed law enforcement official who agreed to speak to the press on the condition of anonymity described the scene at the McClellan's home as awful. And they said, "There are shell casings everywhere. This is unprecedented. This is unbelievable. This is huge."
So it wasn't just a bang, you're dead. It was a
massacre. Open fire. Yeah, it was a massacre. So after the McClellan's bodies were found, there was a massive, massive response by law enforcement. The FBI came out because he was the DA of the county. Dozens of marked and unmarked vehicles patrolled the area. Officers went door to door to interview any potential witnesses. They also went to every other employee of the DA's office and checked on them to make sure they were okay.
At that point,
obviously, they were very concerned about the other employees' safety, but they were all fine. So they provided security at their homes.
Was there any other attempt to get to the other employees, or was it just specifically for those two?
It was just specifically for those two. And obviously Cynthia, you know, because she was at the house.
She was there.
So immediately, and I just barely mentioned this earlier, but the suspicion fell on the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, because Hassie and McClelland were involved in bringing a major federal indictment against them in November of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
But other experts didn't agree. Like, they didn't think that the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas were involved, because they said that they didn't typically target public officials, and that the way they were killed wasn't typical of how they would have done it. Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't they have also claimed it?
That's the thing I was wondering too, because... it's like almost like a terrorist act mm-hmm. to do that. So they would have been like...
Yeah, that was us.
Yeah.
Because they want people to be afraid of them. That's the point.
The people of Kaufman were just like running with this theory, but there was another suspect. So after Hassie was pronounced dead, Mike McClelland went to the hospital and he was overheard saying a name.
Ooh.
So he says, Eric Williams.
So he didn't die.
Well, no, Mike, it was when Hassie was dead.
Oh, gotcha. The first guy.
So Mike McClelland, he first ran for district attorney in 2006, and his opponent was Eric Williams.
No, over a DA race.
Well, it's a little more than that. But Eric Williams was also a Republican from Kaufman. He and McClelland got into it because Williams questioned McClellan's character and suitability, and then McClellan ultimately lost that election. And then after that, they both lost that election. But after that, they both just clashed. Like, they did not get along.
Ooh, so small town politics.
Yep. So then at the next election, 4 years later, they were both elected into office. Mike McClellan became the district attorney, and Eric Williams ran and won as justice of the peace.
Hmm.
So they both had really prominent positions in the county, but obviously
they still dislike each other.
Yeah, they still had that bad blood. So then, this is in 2010 when McClelland comes in as district attorney. In 2011, McClelland's office accused Williams of theft of county property because of three computer monitors that Williams said he had borrowed, but... he basically had just taken.
Yeah. But that just seems petty.
It seems pretty petty.
It's a computer monitor. It's probably mm-hmm. $40.
Oh, especially... yeah. I mean, practically people are giving away computer monitors.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes to court. In court, Williams's defense attorney said that the charges stemmed from an attempt to settle a political grudge, which it does sound a little bit like that.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecutor for the case on the DA side was Mark Hassie. And Hassie said that the thefts were evil. And McClelland said
that... the theft of computer monitors were evil.
Three computer monitors. And McClelland said that Williams was bereft of honor.
That's a little overreaching.
And so this other attorney, I think it was a woman, but anyway, she had previously worked with Williams, and she said, she wasn't involved in this case, but she says, this whole thing was a witch hunt, and anyone in the legal community here knows that. Which it does sound like that to me.
Yeah.
Not to excuse, you know, being murdered, but...
right.
So Williams was...
but both are overreaching. So, like,
yeah.
Calling someone evil for stealing three computer monitors is completely overreaching. And then murdering someone because they called you evil is completely overreaching.
I could see, like, impeaching them from office for stealing property, even if it's minor.
Right. And that would even be a tiny bit petty. That would even be just, I don't like them and I want them out. And I'm using this as an excuse.
Exactly.
But you don't...
convict somebody of... yeah.
Right. And publicly... label them as evil.
Yeah.
So they don't like each other. I wonder who slept with whose wife.
I don't think that
I'm speculating.
Yeah, I don't think that had anything to do with it.
Crazy.
But anyway, Williams was convicted in April of 2012. He was sentenced to 2 years of probation. The unfortunate part is that he lost his job and his law license.
Yeah, I was going to say, he will lose his law license.
Yeah.
Over three computer monitors.
Mm-hmm. And so, along with that, he lost his health benefits, which his wife, Kim, had all these conditions. She had rheumatoid arthritis. She had chronic fatigue. And he was her primary caregiver. He also took care of, like, I think it was his father, too.
So his life was ruined.
Yeah.
His livelihood was gone. Everything.
Yep.
That's horrible.
So Mike, after Hassie was murdered, Mike immediately suspected Eric of it. But Mike died before he could gather his own evidence.
Right.
So on April 12th, however, police arrested Eric Williams on charges of making a terroristic threat because he sent an email, supposedly anonymously, to the Kaufman County. And it was right after, like, the day after the McClellan killings, and he warned of further attacks, and they traced it back and found that it came from Williams' computer.
Well, that's hinky.
Yeah. And, like, also dumb that you're sending something from your computer.
Really dumb.
Yeah. Like, get a, what do you call those phones? Burner phone. Get a burner phone.
Yeah.
So during...
Be smart about your horrible crimes.
I know. Watch CSI or something. So during the arrest, the police found guns that matched the murder weapons.
Oh my God.
They also...
Isn't he an attorney?
He was an attorney.
How does he not know how to do this?
I know. And then, so then they found a balaclava, they found military boots, they found night vision goggles. Eric Williams had been previously known to be proficient with firearms. He was the weapons safety instructor in a battalion of the Texas State Guard.
He's just not proficient in covering his tracks.
He's not proficient in that at all.
A child would know to do.
And so they all, like, the investigators also discovered that another member of the Texas State Guard had rented a storage unit on Williams' behalf, and it was like 20 miles from Kaufman. So they go to this storage unit right after they arrested Williams, and they found, like, a crap ton of weapons. They also found a 2004 white Ford Crown Victoria in the storage unit, and that was, like, the same vehicle that was in security footage that was in McClellan's neighborhood.
Gosh. He was so sloppy.
Yeah.
Why was he so sloppy?
Why would you keep the car?
Right. Dump it. Steal it, then dump it.
Yeah.
And wow.
And then after all this, he gets arrested, and then he refused to talk to investigators, which, I think that's probably...
Well, why give him more?
Yeah.
I mean, they already have enough to bury you.
So since he wouldn't talk, they arrest Kim, his wife. And so...
Who's sick.
Yeah. And so she immediately just, like, confesses everything.
Oh, she knew about it.
Yeah. And she said that she knew that Mark, that her husband had shot Hassie and the McClellans, and she'd been the one to drive him to both of the murders.
Oh my gosh.
So they were both charged with capital murder, and they were facing the death penalty. But, and then this part was interesting. So the judge in Kaufman County was like, this case is so notorious in all of Texas that there's literally no jurisdiction we can move it to. So it's going to stay right here.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
But I know he's a criminal. And as our friends, Joe and Jack, say, if you're contemplating a life of crime, you're too smart.
Contemplating a life of crime, you're not smart enough for a life of crime.
He's really not smart enough.
Yeah.
That is, how do you prosecute criminals for a living and yet make those stupid, stupid mistakes? Not that I'm telling people to get away from crime.
Those are really bad mistakes.
I'm a Northern Californian housewife, and I would not make those mistakes if I were going to kill someone.
I know. So anyway, I looked at theheavy.com, mike.com, The Guardian, Independent UK. And so it was even covered in the UK. And then, Obviously, the Dallas News.
What is Mike.com?
I don't know.
Is there a .com just for mics? I want to join that because most mics are good looking.
It's
what I found.
M-I-C mic.
Oh. The microphone mic, not yes. Michael mic. I just got a work text.
Well, we're done with our story, so.
Well, I don't think that he was definitely not a criminal expert, but
he was definitely not an expert. Neither are we, though.
Neither are we, though.
We're better than him.
Or otherwise, but way better than him. Not that we're going to commit crimes.
No, we just know if you're going to do it, you can't be that dumb.
Right. Ditch the car.
I'd rather have my drinks.
Ditch the gun. I love my drinks because we're drunks.
Guess that makes us drunks.
Yay!
As always, you can contact us on Facebook at Crime and Time OTR.
On Instagram, we are Crime and Time OTR.
On Twitter, we're at Crime and Time OTR.
And our email is crimeandtimeotr@gmail.com. Email is where you will want to send us cocktail suggestions, things topics. You want to learn about. Yeah.
Or just say hi.
Or just say hi.
And we also have a new Patreon page. Yay. If you want to buy us a drink.
Buy us a drink.
So that is
patreon.com/crimeandtimeotr.
And we're going to be offering some perks for our patrons.
Absolutely. I'm excited. See you there.
Thank you for listening.